We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Tuesday, November 16th. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Gill. And this is Jeff Schwartz. Smart, you are powered by the Varsity Podcast Network. What's the title for the show? Tired and Wired? Tired and Punchy, but no one cares that we're tired. But nonetheless, the Chiefs are back on track. A lot of quarterbacks bounce back in week 10 of the NFL. We have a lot to get to. Welcome into our Tuesday NFL show. Gabe, no one cares that any of us can't sleep and we have lives, but man, this might be an interesting episode.
Well, you know, listen, our producer on this show is a young man with a lot of life ahead of him. And I would say, Jeff, I'm going to take a chance here. He might have to edit this out. Listening to me and you talk about our lives, particularly our lives as fathers, is better birth control than anything you can buy at a CVS. All right, young men, if you are contemplating whether it's worth, being extra careful out there. Just hear me and Jeff talk about what we live through with our children every weekend, and I promise you, you will not take those chances any longer.
Tune me at Jeff Schwartz if you want to be part of the first 7 minutes of our non-taped episode before we put. I mean, Gabe's crushing a bagel as we're getting going.
It's the only time I've got by myself to eat.
It's
Jeff.
The 7 seconds we do before the show. But nonetheless, we are here. We had a great week of NFL action. I actually won some wagers this week in the NFL, which I will take. So, all right, Gabe, where do you want to start? Let's start with some quarterbacks, I feel like.
I want to start with some guys who are just as punchy as we are. And this is a phenomenon that I bring up a lot on this show. And I always say it because it's like an easy fan take. But I'm starting to think there's something to this, Jeff. Big name quarterbacks really thrive on the whole chip on a shoulder thing. And we saw a lot of evidence of it this weekend. Cam, obvious chip on a shoulder, worked great for him in his comeback. Aaron Rodgers, chip on a shoulder guy, boom, takes a W in his comeback. Dak, Mahomes, both criticized for not playing that well recently. Boom, exploding the best versions of themselves as their teams come back with big wins. And now Bruce Arians is trying to put a chip on his own quarterback's shoulder, criticizing him for two picks, one of which wasn't even his fault. Even I can admit it. Chip on a shoulder thing is real, Jeff. It matters.
Yeah, does it matter for all things? Like, aren't you motivated by people telling you you can't do something? I mean, I know I am. I know I was, right? I actually have a list on my phone. My agent told me to make this list when I was, I don't know, I forget what point in my career, my NFL career, of like, make a list of everyone that told you that you can't do it, can't play in the NFL. And I did. And people use the motivation of, you can't do it, I'm going to show you. And what happens is, because of our culture now, social media, when you have one bad week, Dak Prescott comes off one bad week so far this year of otherwise MVP-esque season. And he hears all week, oh, Dak doesn't have it. The first seven games was a fluke, blah, 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 blah. He comes down and says, hey, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm going to show you guys. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, right? Comes back from a COVID, on the COVID list. For 12 days, he heard, screw you, Aaron Rodgers. Screw you. Screw your takes. I hate you now. I've had people tell me that they're not watching Aaron Rodgers anymore, which is a little extreme. I'm still watching Aaron Rodgers, but they don't respect him anymore. They don't like him anymore. He hears that too, guys. All these players that claim they're non-social media are full of crap. They all get this stuff. Teams, by the way, head coach, I'm on Snapface. I'm on Facebook or Face Twitter, whatever Belichick says.
Now that it's called Meta, it's going to be hard to make those jokes.
That's not happening. And, they all see this stuff, right, guys? They all see people ragging on them. They can feel the pressure coming down on them. And when you have good players like Dak and Aaron and Pat, they're going to play better in those moments. Cam Newton for Carolina did not have many reps in the game. Scoring the first run he had, which was from the two-yard line, and then the very next series, passed from the two-yard line for a touchdown. Think about what he's been through, right? He leaves Carolina after he thought he was going to stay, goes to New England, had a good start to last season, then kind of tumbled off, entered training camp as a starter. Now, I mean, it feels like very clearly that Mac Jones may have been a starter anyways, but he misses that time because of the COVID protocols. Cam was not COVID positive, but he went away from the team and had to miss those 3 or 4 days, and Mac came in and played well, and they cut Cam, and then Cam gets vaccinated eventually. Now he's back in Carolina and boom, like the motivation of that, of, you know what, screw you, New England, screw you, NFL, I'm back, I can still play, I'm going to make plays happen. And so players use that motivation. I know I have in my life, really on the NFL side. I've never had in the media tell me, I mean, you can't do it. I don't know. I've had people not hire me. It's a little different than like outright, like not wanting, the NFLs are more ruthless than that. Even college. I mean, I had coaches tell me I never played in the NFL. All those things. So you use that motivation. And remember, we are way too reactionary week to week. That's why I think people enjoy following me on social media, because or listen to this podcast. I'm not that way. I don't make these every week. Like, I'm not a roller coaster, right? Kind of, it takes weeks, months sometimes, for me to change an opinion on a team, because each week is different. And you know that typically outliers are not the normal, right? Teams are going to have outliers. Players will have outlier games or months or weeks, but typically what you see most of the time is what you get. And when Dak Prescott and Pat Mahomes for last month and Aaron Rodgers get crapped on, they're going to come back with a little more motivation to prove everyone wrong.
Well, okay. And so, it's human nature, but I think it's unique to a certain kind of quarterback who have to generate some sort of passion from within, because all of these guys are high performers, and when things are clicking, it just works, and they don't need to be pissed off to win. But it seems like they all find this extra gear. And so I want to drill into Cam for a second, because he did, like you said, he did not have a ton of snaps. There was no real reason he had to have a huge impact on a huge game, by the way. I mean, they're alive because of that game. And actually, the Cards are in trouble. We'll talk about them both in over-under. But I guess what I'm curious about is, like, do other people buy it? Because I saw this video that everyone's sharing of, like, Cam circled up in the huddle on the sidelines, and everyone's listening to him, and he's coaching them up, and he's immediately the leader again. And that's a very convenient thing for fans to point out. But is that real? I mean, you've actually been in huddles with the guy. Do people buy him immediately?
Well, you buy the veteran experience. Of course you do, right? I mean, he's played 10 years of football. He was the MVP. It's interesting. It's ironic that his first start again, or first time on the field with the Panthers again, was at the place he had his first start, which was in Arizona in 2011. Of course, if a player of 10 years who has had the stature that he has had comes to the sidelines and says, hey guys, this is what we're doing wrong, especially when things aren't going well, of course you listen to him. Your ears perk up. And you listen to a guy that has that. I remember, Eli Manning, I've said this before, I played with Eli after he won his two Super Bowls. So it's a little bit different than playing with Eli either before or after that time. But Eli did not talk very much. But when he did talk to us, he wasn't shy, but like, he didn't like team speech very often. But when he did, And I'm not sure Cam does it as a team speech guy either. I have no idea. But when Eli spoke, and I didn't know Eli from scratch. Never talked to him before, never met him before. When I got to New York, again, I mean, he welcomed me, but he didn't give a lot of speeches. He didn't talk to the team during training camp, none of that stuff. But the first time he got up and spoke to us about something, I forget what it was, you're like, oh, okay. Like, it matters more when Eli says it. Because he's been there. He's done it. And Cam has been there and done that. And for that team, there's a lot of young players on the team. Sam Darnold's not their guy. Like, he tried to be their guy. He's not P.J. Walker. Like, you take the personality of your quarterback, right? That's typically what teams are. And in that moment, I saw the video too. Cam's leading. He's a leader. I think he gets a bad rap because he dresses stylish. Is it stylish? I don't know. I could never dress like that. But, you know, he dresses a stylish way. He has press conferences that might not be normal. He uses that weird font, whatever. But no one has ever questioned him as a leader, right? No one's ever questioned that in Carolina. And we saw that on the first game back, the team gravitated toward him because there was a void on that team. There's no veteran vocal leader on that team.
Yeah, well, the charisma part has never been in question, and I think he was criticized for it being too much or it being, you know, look at me. But they do look at him. Like, I don't know, that's one of those times. I mean, both things I've offered in this segment are pretty dumb fan guy takes, but you're telling me as a person who's literally been in the huddle with this dude that it's real, that people actually respond to that. So then let me ask you this. Bruce Arians is trying a trick that worked for him last year, and I think it's a risky one to go back to this year. He's publicly calling out Tom Brady and saying, you know, we lost because Tom didn't play well. His picks were on him. They weren't on the receivers. That's debatable. He's basically just going back and hoping this works and it fires up his quarterback and not lose his quarterback. Do you think it will work?
I don't know. I mean,
Will it put a chip on his own quarterback? It seems to have always worked.
Like, this is what always works, right? Is that, you know, always being able to find ways to motivate Tom by calling him out, by saying he's done, by saying he's washed. Those are all ways that have worked in the past. I don't know why it would be any different now. I mean, Tom was salty, dude. He barely did a post-game press conference. And this, you know, salty Tom is what we've come to expect, obviously, after bad performances. But yeah, I don't know why it wouldn't work this year. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, this is the proven now over 20-year career that when you doubt Tom Brady, especially like in the playoffs last year, you just shouldn't, because you're going to end up not costing your team, because typically we're fans doing that, but you're going to lose those moments, because Tom Brady thrives up being criticized.
Yeah, but by his own coach at a time when he wasn't even actually to blame.
But last year, same thing happened, and Tom wasn't to blame for some of the stuff too, and it worked. Now, Tom might just be immune from it, and maybe the team needs to hear that. Like, maybe Bruce Arians, it makes sense to tell the team it was Tom's fault. I don't know. Maybe he understands he can take the brunt of this and just be like, okay, fine. I it's my fault, everyone. Like, you know, it might not be, obviously, but there's an understanding between him and Bruce that I'll take the fall for it. It just works better for our team if I do that. Maybe that's the way they motivate themselves.
Hmm. Okay. It's an interesting mind game that you're playing with Tom Brady. Also, by the way, you brought it up. Like, what a baby. Just do the post game. What's your problem?
I'm a Tom Brady defender, especially on this show, because there's no one who hates Tom Brady more than Gabe over here. But yeah, he should have done a longer press conference. I don't like when players do that when they lose. Like, I know it sucks you lost, but when things are good, you do the press conferences. When things are bad, you gotta do it also.
Yeah, that's just part of the gig. And like, sorry, you know, it is just a game and you lost the game. Like, you just have to answer the stupid questions. You don't have to love it. You don't have to give long answers. You don't have to be a ball of fun, but just stand there and answer the questions. I mean, that's just what it takes. I don't understand why it's like, well, I don't like losing. Like, well, yeah, no crap, dude. Who does? Like, how about the guys who lose almost all the time who still show up and have to take those dumb questions? Like, that's part of the gig.
Yeah, like your Jets, they keep showing up every week.
They show up and answer the questions. Robert Saleh's not ducking the media. God bless the guy. I mean, you know, that's part of the job. I just wish that Tom Brady realized that sometimes. Well, listen, one of the things the Chiefs didn't have to worry about was getting bad questions fired at them in postgame. This was probably the most joyous any Chiefs fan, you especially, has been all year. You and Nick Wright are just sounding off on your Chiefs. You know, a lot of people were out on them. Now they're saying they're all the way back. They're atop the AFC West. Pat had 5 touchdowns. Everybody's eaten. It's great, right? Like, no problems remaining. Chiefs are the favorite again. Jeff, say it.
Well, look, Gabe, I can either take the 3+ years of excellent offense that we've seen from the Chiefs or the 1 month they struggled. What should I do? What should I believe is going to happen? The month they struggled or the great offense they had for three plus years? Mm-hmm. I'll go with the great offense for 3+ years. And a night, by the way, when there was plenty more to be had. There were plenty of plays to be made that weren't made. We had a little bit of fumble luck go our way. You know, the things that, you know, we had a terrible turnover on special teams. But, you know, we kept turnovers to a minimum. Offensive line protected their butts off for Pat Mahomes. And, look, the Raiders, it's interesting. I talked about this. I was on with Mina Kimes last week on her podcast. And we talked specifically about what the Raiders are going to do on defense. And we said, so this cover two thing has been happening, right? So everyone's playing cover two against Kansas City, two deep safeties. But you have to be good at cover two to run cover two. Like, you have to practice it and do it a lot. The Raiders do almost none of it. And so the idea was, are they going to run cover two, which is giving the Chiefs problems, or run their defense, which is one high, and then just hope your technique wins? And none of it worked. They did a little cover two, didn't work, and they did some single high, and they got blown up. So teams are going to come back. They play Dallas this weekend. They're going to run cover two, I would imagine. But Dan Quinn also, the DC for the Cowboys, is also a Pete Carroll guy, right? So maybe the one high is in his system as well. It's hard to just come out and run too high when you don't practice it, right? There's different technique for corners and for safeties and for linebackers and for the pass rush as well. It's all different. And the Chiefs looked efficient. Pat Mahomes found second options all the time, right? He looked downfield, boom, running back. Like, he was just very, the screen game was back, but the offensive line, they run the ball really well. That looked like the Chiefs' offense. That ways they got Travis Kelce and Hill involved, it just looked like it should. And I would like to believe that this is moving forward what they're going to be. Defensively, by the way, too, much better on defense. They've been playing much better on defense. It's helpful that DeSean Jackson went the wrong way for some reason and fumbled. But the defense is better. The offense is doing their part. Now, they have Dallas coming up. Tough game to play. That Arrowhead, hopefully that helps them a little bit. But guess what? The rest of the AFC, you had your chance to bury them. You had your chance. And now they're first place in the AFC West, the 4 seed right now. Look, they lose a tiebreaker to Tennessee and Buffalo and Baltimore. I get that. You know, but nonetheless, guys, they're back, and you had a chance to bury them. The year they won the Super Bowl, they were 6-4 after 10 games. They're 6-4 right now. 6-4. And no one in the AFC has claimed the top spot. Look, I know Tennessee won again. Buffalo, they smashed the Jets, but, you know, every week on offense, it's like, I don't know. Baltimore lost to Miami. So many injuries on Baltimore. Is it Pittsburgh who tied the Lions? No. Is it Cleveland? No. Chargers? No. Colts? No. Like, who? It's Kansas City's right there. They're right where they want to be. So 6-4 after 10 games, some ups and downs. First place in the AFC West as we sit right now.
I know you feel good about saying all that. And there is a team who it might be, and it pains me to talk about it. That'll be our next topic. You left one off the AFC list. It's 6-4 team that's red hot right now. I hate it.
Oh, I did. Yeah. Well, they're not Super Bowl contenders. Okay. But I get to slam dunk on people for Kansas City today. And because I told you guys, just guys, it's going to, and I said last week, do you remember, Gabe? I said last week that throw from Pat Mahomes to end the game against the Packers.
You said this.
Changed everything.
Yes.
So did Nick Wright. He said the same thing too. And he's been very, I said, guys, it sometimes takes, you know, if you're a hitter and you're in an 0-for-4 game slump, maybe just hit a single, like a good contact single, right? To last, you know, Your team's down 8-1. It's in the 7th inning, and you just hit a good single, like a boom, right up the middle, and sparks you. It's a little more stress situation for Pat. It's a 15-yard throw on the run, like boom, he hits it. Game's over. You feel great about yourself, and the rhythm of the Chiefs' offense looked different, right? Like there was a rhythm to it. There was a flow to it. There was some boom, 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 boom. Oh, here's your boom. Kelce's open. So it just felt like the Chiefs' offense. So, guys, they're back. I'm sorry to tell you.
Okay, well, you're talking so much about rhythm, and it's something felt like back to normal, and it reminded you of the good times. I'm going to throw something at you that's it's out there on Chiefs Twitter. I think one of our friends and listeners, Tyler Grant, put this on my radar, and I'm going to bring it to you, and I don't think you're going to like this, but there is a theory out there that Coach Reed had sort of handed the reins over offensively to Eric Bieniemy because obviously he's earned the right to run that offense, but also because we're kind of all mystified why Coach Bieniemy hasn't gotten a head coaching job anywhere. And that was one of the criticisms was, well, he's not actually technically in charge of the offense. That's the kind of thing we heard. So they turned over the offense and things didn't go so well. And that maybe this week was the week that Andy sort of quietly took it back. That's a summary of a take that is out there. I don't know if it's right or wrong. Care to respond?
Yeah, it's wrong. But I will say it's been pretty interesting, right? So the last couple of years when the Chiefs offense was doing really well, remember how many times during a game that the camera showed Eric Bieniemy calling plays in and everyone's, oh my, EB, great job calling plays. Mm-hmm. And this year when the Chiefs offense struggled, guess who got the blame? Andy Reid did. Mm-hmm. Because Andy Reid's in charge of the offense. That's why. And nothing against Eric Bieniemy. This is not, I've said for many years, should be a head coach. Someone should hire him, be the head coach. But when things are going well, people praise Eric Bieniemy. When things are going poorly, they bash Andy Reid. Like, should, right? That kind of tells you, I think, who runs the offense? It's Andy Reid. Andy Reid does a collaborative effort. It's not just him, right? Like he says, okay, you have, Bieniemy, you're scripting the red zone this week, or you have third down, whatever it is, or, you know, offensive line coach, you do the run game. Like everyone has their, and there's, it's a collaborative effort. It's not just calling plays himself. He'll ask people, hey, what should we run here? But the idea that Eric Bieniemy called the offense this year and therefore it was bad and now Andy Reid took it over is BS. It's always Andy Reid's offense. He didn't give it up. Why would he give it up? There's no point in giving it up. So that's not at all what has happened here. And that would have been reported, by the way, 100%. There would have been people in the NFL who wanted to get that out if that was true. And it's certainly not true.
Okay. Well, thank you for clearing that up. I didn't know what was right or wrong about that, but I know it's circulating. All right. So I asked you at the beginning, are the Chiefs the favorites? Let me end by just saying, are they the favorite in the AFC right now?
I'd bet on them, but they have a tough playoff road, though. They have to go to Buffalo and go to Tennessee. I still think Buffalo is that team because Buffalo defensively is doing some really good things.
You know where else they might have to go in January? If things keep up, I hate saying it, they might have to go to New England. I don't think they're necessarily going to win the division, but, man, they could be the top wildcard team the way they're playing. So Mac Jones didn't have to break anyone's ankles this week, didn't have to cheat. He still has $15,000 in his pocket that he should have been fined for last week. And he managed to throw for 100-something yards. And that was enough to get dubbed, you know, the next coming of Tom Brady as he won, I think, five straight. It's crazy the run there.
I think it's four.
Four straight, yeah. 5 of 6, whatever. They're 6-4 and they look really good. Their defense is good. They're beating good teams. They just basically ended the Browns and maybe Baker forever. Like, well, it's happening, isn't it? Like, this is real. For the last 3 weeks, I've been like, it's not real, right? And you're not sure, but now it kind of feels real. The Pats are good.
Yeah, it's real. They're good. So it's an interesting thing that happened last year. I mean, it's very typical social media to have this discussion. So, and no football people actually said this out loud because it's not true. So last year, Tom Brady went to Super Bowl. And the classic response is, see, it was Tom Brady and not Bill Belichick. That guy can't coach at all. He lost his edge with Tom Brady gone. And you're like, guy's been a good coach for 40 years, just forgot how to coach. No, they were 7-9 last year with a bad roster. They improved the roster. Now, if you want to give Belichick grief, it's for his roster management, which has been poor. No one says otherwise. It's been poor. He can still coach. And guess what? He has a team now on defense that's like what he wants it to be. They're multiple, right? They do different things, which they always do. A lot more zone coverage this year. Not as much man coverage. He doesn't have Stephon Gilmore. So they changed their identity a little bit. Offensively, same as the Tom Brady method. Run the football, right? Good physical offensive line. They dominated that game. Smart, efficient passes. You're not asking Mac Jones to do too much. Just like, you know, in the later years of Tom Brady, you didn't ask him to do too much. And of course, there's going to be if the Patriots are in a shootout, right? They need to win a game 35-32. Is that what they do best? No. Can they do it? We'll find out. But when your offense is on schedule, this is what it can look like. Mac Jones is making better throws each week. He's improving each week. Does he have the upside of Trevor Lawrence? No. But I think if you were the Jets, would you rather take Mac Jones right now than Zach Wilson?
Well, yeah. I said that all along.
Like he, you did. And I was with you on the Zach Wilson thing. So he's just they're playing efficient brand of football. They appear to enjoy playing with each other. Jacoby Myers has played a bazillion years in the NFL. Never had a passing touchdown, or receiving touchdown, I should say. Finally got one at the end of the game. The whole team ran the field to go celebrate with them. Like, they look like a team that actually enjoys playing with each other. That's very important as well. So there's some swagger in New England, and they're just playing good football, man.
Yeah, they are. And so we just talked about Coach Bieniemy in Kansas City and what credit he does or doesn't deserve, or what blame he does or doesn't deserve. Here's one of the things that drives me crazy about the Patriots and NFL media at large. And this is not a knock on the guy who tweeted this, because I think he does a good job, but he's just sort of been doing this a long time and goes for these narratives. Ed Werder, Josh McDaniels can coach and develop a quarterback. That was the tweet. And then he shows, you know, Mac Jones's numbers so far. Like, is that really the take that, you know, that Coach McDaniels is the one figuring all this out? Like, what? Isn't that just sort of a lazy thing to say? Josh McDaniels proved already that he's at best, like a Belichick sort of errand boy kind of coach. He's just doing what he's told. He went and had a chance to run his own team, didn't go anywhere, and he came right back home to dad. Like, why are we still talking about Josh McDaniels like he's a genius?
He deserves credit for Mac Jones, but what other quarterback has he developed? he didn't develop Tom Brady. That was like Charlie Weiss, whoever was the OC way back when Tom Brady was there. Like, this is he deserves praise for this. I mean, you cannot deny that he has done a good job with Mac Jones so far.
Well,
but to claim he's this overall quarterback whisperer seems silly.
But he's a first round pick who went to Alabama. Like, he didn't come in needing a whole lot of molding, you know? Like, and they don't even ask him to do anything. He dinks and dunks the whole damn game. How many yards did he have? None.
Mac Jones had 198, I think. 196
cool.
yards.
Right,
the Patriots' point differential is plus 100 the last four games, too. Like, they're doing it all. I mean, it's impressive.
I guess I'm just... Belichick is probably like, yeah, go ahead, Josh. Go take the next opening and see how that goes for you again, buddy. Like, you keep telling yourself you're developing my quarterbacks. Let's see who believes that. It's a silly thing that keeps coming up, and I think he must have some good agents or PR people. It's always out there. Every time they have a little bit of success on offense, it's Josh McDaniels' time. I don't get it.
Look, here's the thing, too, about this game, the media game. And we're going to talk about Russell Wilson in a few minutes, because that the way that we had talked about Russell Wilson this week was embarrassing. It wasn't we. It was two people, mostly. Is that, you know, the media members do favors for people that they like, for agents. And this is how the sausage is made. And it might just be Ed Werder, his boys with Josh McDaniels, and send out a tweet. Like, it could be that simple. That's the way it is, though. But you know this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to single out Ed. Lots of people have said stuff like that. And, you know, like you just said, like, there's some truth to it. I don't know. I mean, I just get salty. Every time the Patriots have any success at all, and I have to watch that in my timeline, I get pissy. I'm sorry. Well, can we take a quick break and come back? And then I got a few of your triggers. I got one name in particular, man.
Let's do it.
And Hank has a new term that he coined that I like. He's got a trademark on it in the rundown. Get ready, guys. Kingsbury Collapse coming up next.
I love it.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, welcome back. We're moving the line, and we are starting with the Kingsbury Collapse, trademarked by Hank. Is that imminent? Will the Cards finish over under 11.5 wins now? Jeff, they have 8 of them. What do you think?
So we're going to have to do this now, because it's very important to bring this up, because it's actually rather shocking, his record in the second half of the season. So his first year at Texas Tech, he lost his last 5 games of the regular season, then won the bowl game. All right. So that's 2013 now, first year there. Second season there, He lost, well, he won the first two games and then lost, proceeded to lose 8 of his last 10. I mean, that's kind of maybe just bad. He's just bad that year. Okay. 2015, guys, he started out 5-2 and then lost 4 of his last 6. Not ideal. In 2016, he just was bad that year. It was 3. He was 5-7. How does he get hired in the NFL? But you know, he started out 3-1 and then lost 6 of his last 8. So great start and great finish there. The following season, he's 6-7 and he started out 4-1 and then lost, what my math would tell me there. He lost 6 of his last 8 there again. Like, are we sensing a trend here, guys? Last year at Texas Tech, he starts out 5-2, loses 5 straight to end the season. We know at Arizona, he started, I believe, his first year 3-6-1, and then finished at 6-10, something like that, or 6-9-1. He started 3-3-1, and finished at 6-9-1. Then last year, he started 3-6 and finished something like 8-8. He's finished slow every year. He loses every single season. Why is this year any different? Why is it any different? This is why no one is buying Arizona. This is why no one's buying it.
Okay.
The injuries are piling up now, and he keeps losing.
All right, fair enough. And you've explained this to me, that he is a second-half collapser many times, and I always buy it. I'm here for this bit. Can we maybe admit that not having Kyler Murray has something to do with it? He actually stole a win with Colt McCoy. Like, not having Kyler Murray is the problem more than it's, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and his collapse.
Yeah, well, yeah, Kyler being hurt obviously has not been good, and that's been a problem of his now for a couple of years. He has just been hurt and every time he gets hurt, the team obviously, no surprise, suffers.
Yeah, well, all right. I mean, I don't have any more responses on the Cardinals. I wanted to have a longer conversation about the Cardinals, but I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, I don't have any retees here. I can't talk about this team because I don't actually believe they're worth talking about.
Yeah, exactly. No one believes it.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Let's talk about another team that may or may not be worth talking about, but we touched on them earlier, and I want to come back to them for a very specific question. Cam plays this weekend against, by the way, his old coach, Ron Rivera. Over under 70% of the Panthers quarterback snaps. He got very few of them in week one, but here he comes.
That's a great question. 70% feels high. I mean, PJ Walker played well this past weekend. I think if PJ Walker did not play as well, then this would surely be that. But the question is, how fast can he come up with the game plan, right? How fast can he come up with the offense? I don't think they're going to run that New England, like, pack it in and run the ball offense. I mean, Joe Brady's not going to want to run that. They're going to want Cam in a regular offense. And whether or not he's up to speed, I would say no. I would say that's a lot for it's not, look, guys, this isn't someone you signed in, you know, before training camp. It's the middle of the season, right? To catch up on a new offense and new terminology is very tough. You know, they're not changing the terminology for him either, right? Sometimes they talk about, you know, you go to a new team and they change the terminology for you to make it easier for you. They're not doing that. There's a famous story of Brett Favre, where would he go, where someone on the team translated the calls into West Coast offense calls for him because he didn't know. I think it was the Jets.
I think the first bit, they were like, don't worry about it. We'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, so they had a guy on the staff who took, like, if the call was XYZ, he translated into ABC and gave it to Favre. Like, that's how Favre just didn't want to learn a new offense. That's not going to happen in the middle of the season. And so how quickly he can't pick up on this offense, I would say for this week, in a kind of a revenge game with Ron Rivera, which is still, it's not a revenge game, I would say less than 70% snaps.
Less than 70%. Okay. But all the goal line stuff and all the key spots.
That's all going to be there. Yeah. Third down, goal line, all there. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Talking about another mobile quarterback who may or may not have it anymore. This one is sure to trigger you. Ian Rappaport said that Russell Wilson rehabbed for 19 to 20 hours a day in order to come back from his finger injury. Odds this is even within a few hours of possible. I'm going to say over under 1% chance this is real.
I think Russell Wilson is a nice guy.
Uh-huh.
Right? He seems like a nice guy. But God damn it, guys. Like, why do we talk about him like this? What are we doing? It's a finger injury. We talked about like Alex Smith, and like not even close to these terms. He almost lost his leg. It's a freaking finger injury. What is he doing all day? 19 hours of rehab. Why do we buy this shit? Why are we reporting this crap? It's just crap. He's not doing 19 hours of rehab. It's impossible. Like, when he does squats, is he rehabbing his finger? In the meeting room, what's he doing in the meeting room to rehab his finger? I would love to know what he's doing in the meeting room. Oh, he's just moving his finger up and down, got a little ice pack on there. And they always say, too, that rest and recovery, sleep, is good for rehab. Maybe not for fingers, because a finger's not a big deal. Like, come on, guys, we've got to stop these stories. I even tweeted out today. It was like 8 a.m. I was like, guys, Russ is 7 hours into rehab. We need to pick our days up. And people are taking it seriously. Like, how dare you knock his work ethic? I'm looking forward to the E60, brother. Like, the E60 and Russell Wilson's finger rehab. Like, what? Come on, guys. Like, can we at least, like, the hero worship of some of these guys is unbelievable to me. It's a finger injury. A mallet finger. I had a mallet. Yeah. You see my fingers right here? I had a mallet finger. I don't even remember what finger it's on because that's how little it mattered. Like, I had the same injury he had. I didn't get a pin in it because I just could play on the offensive line. I just played with it. But, like, it's just so much. It's so obnoxious and this needs to stop. Why are we doing this?
Okay. Yes, full cosign, and see previous comment about sometimes it seems like the media just say, like, all right, got it, and copy and paste it and put in a tweet.
But like, think about it. Just like sometimes I'm like, really? Like 19 hours a day. Like, and then you go out and get shut out. Congratulations on your rehab for 19 hours a day. What was more surprising? Was it running this story or Pete Carroll throwing what appeared to be a foot phone on the floor instead of his challenge flag?
I didn't actually see that, but
yeah, he like trying to find his challenge flag and he just like threw like what looked like a foot phone.
A burner phone. Interesting.
Yeah. Or it was like a mouse. I don't know what it was. Like it was an electronic device that maybe it was like a meter or something. I don't know what it was. It was odd. It was very, very odd. But as Hank notes, he might win comeback player of the year, Russell Wilson, because from that injury.
Yeah. Well, you know, another Hank point here, a lot of mic time for Hank. But I think it's the first thing I thought as well. Maybe since you're talking about rest and recovery, maybe Russell is including like an 8 hour night of sleep into his 19 hours. That would still only be 11 hours of rehab time, which I feel like is a lot, but whatever. So now you get 8 plus 11. That's a 19 I can actually believe is possible.
Why would you include sleep time?
Yeah, to rest and recover, man.
That's
like the way when you do your taxes and you say that, like, you know, you have some magazine subscriptions and you take it as a deduction.
I do all that.
Yeah, of course I take that stuff.
But I actually use The Athletic for my work.
All right, see, so that's a real deduction. So maybe he's just putting 8 hours sleep into the rehab time. Maybe that's how he's doing it. Something you and I cannot do. 8 hours sleep would be that'd be the best night's sleep I'd had in months.
I'm promise you right now, we're recording this on Monday. I end my radio show tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, my Pac-12 show. I will be asleep by 9:35. I'm not watching a second of the Monday Night Football game. I don't even know who's playing. I do not care. I'm not, Niners Rams, I think it is. I'm gonna, which is gonna be stupid because I gotta talk about Odell at some point, possibly. So we'll see.
You might have to wake yourself up to comment on Odell. But we'll definitely be talking about him next week. We can promise you that because I bet
nothing happens. It's just we're recording this before the game. I bet nothing happens with Odell. Like nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna do much with him week one, and I think they're gonna be careful with him. He's got that bum shoulder, right? They're gonna want to be very careful because now they really need him. He seemed like a luxury when the trade was sort of getting announced, or the signing rather was getting announced. By the end of that last week, they had to have him because Woods is gone now. So like, I don't think they're going to be in a rush. I think they're going to try to sneak through this week without using him much and then factor him into the offense more and more over the next few weeks. All right, let me ask you this. How many more weeks until I am willing to admit that the Titans are kind of good, over under 4.5 weeks? Take the under.
The show will never be that. We'll never do that. So it's okay.
So we're basically February 14th is the soonest we'll admit they're good.
Yeah, basically we're basically the AFC South is dead to us, right? We don't talk about the C team up there in Indianapolis. We don't talk about them. Mm-hmm. The Titans just it's an odd team.
Yeah, it's a crap.
Ryan Tannehill's playing good football though. But Ryan Tannehill, their pass rush is better this year, and Ryan Tannehill's playing good with all the injuries he's had around him. But who outside of Tennessee thinks they're winning the Super Bowl this year?
I don't know, but they got Houston twice. They got Miami and Jacksonville. Oh, yeah. They got Pittsburgh. We'll talk about them in a second because they don't look great. They got the Niners who might have given up by the time they get them. I mean, there's a very good chance the team we don't want to talk about has 12, 13 wins? Like,
they're probably the tiebreaker of the Chiefs. In, like, they're going to be the one seed, the tiebreaker of the Chiefs and Bills.
And then, you know, let's see who else is still healthy by then. I mean, they will have had all their pieces in place for weeks. Like, they had their big injury. All the other good teams are probably still waiting for their big injury. That's just the way life works. So, I don't know, man.
That's fair.
Could be a weird one. All right. Well, I mentioned the Steelers, who somehow, what a disaster. And man, you know, I normally love the Red Zone channel, but God, guys, why are we spending so much time on Lions-Steelers? I feel like I watched the whole damn Lions-Steelers game. That was one of the worst football games I've ever seen in my life. And now we get a tie. So, Jeff, you played on a pretty horrible team in Carolina at one point. You're qualified to answer this question. Yeah. What are the odds the Lions would rather have gone 0-17 than 0-16-1?
Oh, man. Poor Lions. I feel they. Jared Goff, by the way, has yet to win a game without Sean McVay as his head coach.
That's remarkable.
Some games they battle their asses off. Other games they just suck. I think you would rather go 0-17 because of the tie. Like, you have to talk about the tie afterwards. You're like, oh, we tied the Steelers. God, that game was glorious. I watched the last quarter and a half. God, just a glorious contest. I mean, the football gods delivered us. I mean, the fumbling, the missed kicks, the bad quarterback play. Oh,
it was horrible.
It was destined for a tie.
It was a horrible thing. And then after the game, I think Najee Harris basically was like, what? You can tie?
Every year after every tie, there's one player they find who says, I didn't know we could tie.
Well, he gave it to him, rookie.
I want to bring up, interesting. So I tweeted that out and people said, oh, well, how does he not know that? Well, I'll tell you this, guys. A lot of players actually aren't football fans. They don't watch football. Like, they're good at football. They don't watch football. Huh. They don't watch football outside of the building. They don't pay attention to, like, other things happening in the sport. They don't watch college football. Someone's just good at football. And maybe Najee Harris is one of those guys. He doesn't watch football. He goes home and has a life outside. Not me. I come home from a game and immediately put on more football. I love football. But some guys just don't watch it. And maybe he just hadn't watched enough NFL football. He's, you know, played at Alabama. There's no pro team in Alabama. Maybe he just didn't watch a lot of NFL football.
Yeah. Also, I mean, he probably didn't.
College can't end in a tie either. So.
And he probably didn't realize that you could ever play a game that you didn't win by four touchdowns because of his time at Alabama.
Oh, is that Alabama? That's an Alabama joke.
He didn't even know. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. We're not allowed to make Alabama being.
No, I'm saying I thought we spent that time on New Mexico State yesterday.
Ah, well, we did. We did get a little Alabama time in yesterday. Boy, these days are running together, Jeff. I can't keep track of my Sundays and my Mondays anymore, my Tuesdays. It's all a mess. Let me tell you one guy who's having a hard time with his days. And this one, I really want to know your thoughts. All right, so the guy who we said we would not name, the quarterback.
We're still not going to name it. We're not going to name it.
The quarterback in Indianapolis. Made it known through the media that he would not be attending his wife's delivery of their second child on Sunday during the Jags game that he was playing. He would not go to that. And even if the delivery came next Sunday, he would also not go to that. He was skipping the delivery of his child. He had to focus on football. And hey, I get it. But I want to know the odds that you would survive if you suggested that to your wife when you were a football player.
Ooh, I'd be dead.
She would not let that happen, would she?
Well, we had both our kids before, like purposely. So, no, I mean, we didn't like plan that out 9 months before that. But we had Alex. We induced my son a week before training camp in 2014, and then Emmy was like 12 days before training camp. I think she wasn't. Was she induced 12 or 14 days before training camp in 2016? So. Yeah, she wanted to have the kid before went to training camp, which I told her, I said, babe, I would gladly come home for 3 days for birth. And she's like, no, you just can't do it. I go, no, I can, I promise you. But she didn't want to like have me to fly home. And so I wouldn't want to miss it. But I guess like how many kids is this for for the quarterback in blue in Indianapolis?
I believe this is his second. And so we're joking around a little here. I don't know if the baby was born yet.
How many babies is it like? I don't need to be there for that. How many babies do you think?
Well, we've already established that our wives do not listen to this show. So can I answer this question honestly?
Yeah, go ahead.
I had the third.
I was going to say the third. Like, third's about enough. But you had two at one time, though.
Right.
By you, I mean your wife.
Yes. I think the second one, you still better be there. I don't know how you're supposed to not be there.
I feel like with a third birth, it's like, if you're there, you're there.
I think it's debatable by then, assuming everyone's healthy. I gotta assume everyone's healthy here, and yes, I'm assuming that with the guy we're talking about. After three, I feel like, you know, you don't even have to be at an NFL game. You could be playing Madden or something and be like, I'm sorry.
If you guys are listening to this late in the show, you obviously love our show. Tweet me or leave a comment on iTunes about how many births you think your wife would allow you to, at what point would your wife allow you to not be at the birth? I feel like three and up is like, you're safe to not have to be present. The first one, you gotta be
gotta
there.
Gotta be there.
Gotta be there.
Not only gotta be there, gotta be ready for days in advance and be through every part of it.
Isn't it it's so funny, man. My buddies had their second kid like a week ago and I'm talking to him and it reminds me of the second kid, you're just like, whatevs. The first one, everything's prepared. Like, the second one, you're just like, whatever. We'll have a bag at home somewhere. We'll just bring supplies with us at some point.
Yeah.
There's no worries, no concerns. You're like, oh, I've done this before. I don't have to do this again. Oh man, kid humor.
Well, we've really full circled this show because this show began talking about how we could really, by the end, people who were being uncareful in bed would be like, oh man, I can't risk having kids. I got to be more careful. And here we are ending our show talking about the birth of children. So, you know, it's a complete circle for the young men who might choose to press play on this podcast.
Yeah, man. If you don't want to have kids or you're on the fence, we will offer you, if you want to tweet me at Jeff Schwartz and you want to come on our show for the first 7 minutes every Monday afternoon, if we record the show, you're welcome to come on. We will talk to you about our kid problems. Not even problems. We're like, they're bougie problems. Our lack of sleep. Whatever you want to talk about. We will be your birth control on this show if you would like. And also get called old because I'm 35 and our producer is 17 and he yelled at me. He called me old earlier. He called me his parents' age.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He called you his parents' age, but while telling a story about how he tried to get his dad to help him with a Nintendo Switch game, like, what the hell's happening? Why would his dad ever know the answer to that? The whole thing was very confusing.
Yes, it made no sense. I think he's just trying to fit in, Gabe. He's young. He's just trying to fit in.
Well,
with us.
Listen, when you're young these days, anything you think, put it in the comment section, you know, and you'll be famous as a result. So he's just
TikTok it.
Just TikTok. Just say it in the form of some dumb dance. Every other person in your whole freaking life also did. What is that about TikTok? Can someone tell me, is there a reason no one has any original idea? Why does everyone do the same dance to the same song over and over again?
It's also, most people don't even dance very well either. It's just like, I don't know. I did a TikTok once. My wife had me do one of those dances. I did it. It's on video somewhere. I don't know.
I liked your TikToks. I thought that was going to start breaking out of a stance and into a block. I thought that could pick up.
It never did. I am a very many rungs below attractive enough to be a TikTok star. Some of the videos are just like, they're cringy, but I like the food. I watch the food videos on there. There's this guy I follow who has a farm. I love his farm videos. The dancing videos, I mean, whatever. That's like not why I'm there. But all right, enough blabbering about TikTok. We are powered by the Varsity Podcast Network. You can find us there on iTunes, on Spotify. Please leave a review. Rating would be great as well. They really help our show, at Jeff Schwartz as well, if you want to leave a comment. We'll be back on Thursday. We had a winning week. By the way, Pac-12 record, 26-9. I think our NFL record now is 21-29. We have 4-1 this week. We needed that in the worst way. So we're digging ourselves out of a hole in the NFL. We'll be back on Thursday. Have a great couple of days, everyone.